Hello there! My name is Bartholomew J. Fancy Cat, but humans have taken to calling me Sprinkles. I am a feline of discerning taste and luxury, and I demand the very best, and I want it delivered to my door. Meowbox is a subscription service that caters to felines like myself and gives us all sorts of new treats to try, toys that entertain, and it even helps fellow animals in rescue shelters. They even personalize it for your cat's name. They still insist on calling me Sprinkles, however. What are you waiting for, human? Promo code GEEK10 and get 10% off your first subscription at meowbox.com. Now go visit meowbox.com for more information and tell them Sprinkles sent you.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of this week and kink. This week and kink.
Welcome out to ThisWeekInGeek.net. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Don, and I'm not alone as I wander through the wastelands of the Commonwealth, but perhaps I'm in the NCR, or maybe I'm wandering through New Vegas. We don't know where I am. But this episode is brought to you by the good folks over at meowbox.com. Make sure to listen to the commercial at the beginning of the show for a cool promo code, but also people like offworlddesigns.com, where there's a promo code on your right sidebar. Go take a look. Go check them out. They just had a fantastic Black Friday sale. So trust me, you're going to want to get some of that cool stuff for Christmas. But as I mentioned, I'm not alone. I have my companion who is not dog meat.
Andrew Radru Roebuck.
I like it. You should have just said Rad Roach.
Andrew Rad Roach.
I love it. And of course, I'm with another person who joins us, the leader of the Ottawa Enclave.
Ryan, the uneven flow, watching the Grey Cup.
Yes, folks. So you will periodically get updates about the Grey Cup. Actually, you know what? By the time this airs, the game may be over. We'll see. Anyway.
By the time we're done recording, the game may be over.
We may very well be over. So anyway, guys, we are here talking about the Fallout franchise. Last month, or this previous month, rather, Fallout 4 came out to much acclaim. People buying it everywhere. People even scalping Pip-Boys. Which I was actually able to finally find one, but that's a story for a little bit later in the show. And yeah, so we're going to talk about the Fallout franchise, some of its ups, its downs, some of the really cool alternate history of the franchise, and what's going to happen with it kind of moving forward, because Ryan definitely has some strong opinions on it. And I feel rather uninformed, but definitely interested to hear what Ryan has to say about this, because it'll may shape my opinion kind of going forward. So as we often do with the show, I guess we go around the table, see what everybody has been up to, and I guess let's start with the Rad Roach himself. What's up?
Not too much, you know, just been living and working. That's it. My life's boring. I'm a boring person.
Holy cow.
Now, didn't you go to the Ottawa, there was like a, Comic-Con or something.
Yeah, the Ottawa Pop-Con. That was fun.
Pop Expo, you're not Mike.
Who was there?
There was that man from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Grant Ward, was there.
That's cool.
William Shatner was there, but I didn't see him. His old fat ass charges too much.
Wow, coming out swinging out of the gates.
So I guess he's not going to be on as a guest anytime soon.
Critical hit with the Vats right there.
And Daniel Logan, who was Lil Boba Fett in the second movie.
He is a surprisingly nice kid. I interviewed him about 8-9 years ago.
Ray Park was there. Sam Witwer, who people know as either Crashdown from Battlestar Galactica, or he was the voice/inspiration for Starkiller from the
Force Unleashed.
Force Unleashed series. I'm trying to remember who else, but yeah, those are kind of like, I don't know, Andrew got most of the main ones. It's like a minor Comic-Con. It's about, you know, half the size, half the number of people go, and they have about a tenth of the star power, so...
I don't know, that's pretty cool getting the guy who played Grant War, considering how well Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is currently doing.
Yeah, he's a really nice dude.
Yeah, he might have been the most notable guy. I mean, aside from, like, people know Shatner, but I mean, you know...
It's Shatner.
Yeah, and you got to pay an arm and a leg. Also, to be fair, if you gave him money, Shatner would probably appear at the birthday party in your backyard. So,
yay.
So if you want to donate to this particular PayPal, there will be a link in the episode description. Wow. Well, that's still kind of fun. Ryan, what about you? What have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
I went to PopX. No, anyway. I've really done too much. Started a new relationship. Hurrah. I'm sure our listeners really care about that.
She's cute. Man, I will definitely say that.
I haven't done shit.
You haven't done shit? What are you currently playing right now? Because it is that time of year.
Not much. Going through like the Steam backlog. Still replaying. All right, so for anyone who doesn't know this, I did a review for Metal Gear Solid and had to plow through it in record time. And now I've kind of been able to take my time with it and go back and replay it and just try to enjoy it and that kind of thing. And there's a ton of stuff I've discovered about it. Like, it's a really well put together game. But whenever you kind of do a lot more exploring, try to, you know, 100% missions, try to build up your base, that kind of thing, my God, does the second half of that game drag. And it's frustrating because it's such a good game. But I mean, after, you know, 70 hours on that first act, well, then you get to the second one, which is kind of
unnecessary almost.
Yeah. And you warp speed through it is one problem. And then B, a lot of the missions are just redos of the original. Like, this is stuff you don't notice whenever you're a reviewer and you've got to plow through this game in as quick a time as possible. I'm not saying it's a bad game. It's still up there for game of the year. But man, it feels like it's kind of hurting it whenever I replay it. So I've been replaying that. I've been trying to start a replay of Witcher 3, but Metal Gear takes up most of that time right now. Randomly replaying Limbo.
Good game. I thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Yeah, luckily it only took me like 3 hours. And then at some point I got to get through the Nightmare Steam backlog. And of course there's a sale going on right now, so thanks.
Exciting times.
Yeah, thanks, Valve.
For myself, I've been playing Rise of the Tomb Raider, heavy contender for my game of the year, definitely in the top three. I'm getting ready for Star Wars The Force Awakens. I'm currently preparing a new campaign for Terrible Warriors based in Star Wars, hopefully releasing the week of Force Awakens. So,
ooh.
It's been nothing but lightsabers, Jedi, and Hutts for the last 3 weeks, and... I'm still nowhere near done.
Sounds like my Saturday night.
I completely forgot to mention this, and Andrew, you should have been on this. Should have been on your list too. I got to watch and then now rewatch The Bliss That Was Jessica Jones.
Oh yes, Jessica Jones is great. I just want to drink all the alcohol she does.
I'm 5 episodes into it. I really enjoy it. I'm actually getting my wife into Daredevil right now, which is tremendously fun. So I'm rather happy she's kind of digging the MCU stuff now again, because she tapped out during Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But the Netflix stuff will always be considerably better. So anyway, all right, guys, so we've kind of wrapped on long enough about what we've been up to. Like I said, we're going to talk about the Fallout franchise. I'm excited. So sit down, grab some Nuka-Cola Cherry. But first, here are just the facts.
Following total atomic annihilation, the rebuilding of this great nation of ours may fall to you. That's why we at Vault-Tec have prepared these educational materials for you to better understand the 7 defining attributes that make you special.
War. War never changes, but the Fallout series has changed quite a bit since its debut. Fallout was originally intended to be a sequel to the game Wasteland, which was released by Interplay way back in 1988. The rights to Wasteland were lost by Interplay, and thus the Fallout series was born. Fallout was originally going to use Steve Jackson's GURPS system for the character creation, and in fact, at one point, the game had GURPS in the title. In the end, the system was scrapped, and the special system, Strength, Perception, Endurance, Charisma, Intelligence, Agility, and Luck, was born. Fallout 1 was released September 30th, 1997, to critical acclaim. It was an isometric, turn-based strategy RPG. Try saying that three times fast, everyone. The story saw your created character tasked with finding a new wander chip for your vault, Vault 13 in this game, and the game would create many of the iconic factions which would populate all of the later Fallout titles. The Brotherhood of Steel, the Super Mutants, the beginning of the New California Republic, all of them originated from the original game in the series. The game would garner a number of awards, and actually it continues to garner acclaim today via retrospectives and sort of, you know, old-school reviews, etc., etc. It's generally considered one of the greatest role-playing games of all time, and there's quite a few people that actually consider it one of the greatest games of all time. Fallout 2 was released a year later, also on September 30th, and contained many fixes and upgrades to the original game's engine. This time, the story saw the player character as a descendant of the original Vault Dweller from Fallout 1. Your character is tasked with finding a Gek, the Garden of Eden creation kit, to save your village. Now, later portions of the game would reveal the Enclave as the villains for the first time in the Fallout franchise. Fallout 2 would again debut to near-universal acclaim, and is also widely thought of as one of the greatest role-playing games of all time, and many people consider it one of the best games of all time, blah blah blah, you get the idea. The first spin-off of the main franchise would be released in 2001, Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel, or as I nicknamed it, Fallout Crashtics Brotherhood of Steel, would be the first game in the franchise to allow players to play without the trademarked turn-based strategy combat. The game was more of a squad-based game with heavy RPG elements thanks to the special system and all of the perks. The game received mostly favorable reviews, but was criticized heavily for requiring multiple patches to function properly, not crash all the time. Sadly, this would become a series staple. The next game to be released was Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, and the less said about it, the better. It would mark the first appearance of the franchise on consoles, as well as be the first action-oriented game. Released in 2004 to near-universal panning, it would be the final game Interplay would develop in the franchise. Now, after quite a bit of rights issues, discussions, and other things, Fallout 3 was developed by Bethesda Game Studios and released on October 28, 2008. The story picks up 30 years after the setting of Fallout 2. This time the player is a Vault Dweller in Vault 101, who's forced to flee when the Overseer tries to have them arrested after the player's father left the Vault. Once free, the player is called the Lone Wanderer and ventures out into the wasteland near and in Washington, D.C. to try to find their father. It differed heavily from the series' previous entries by being a first- or third-person perspective, and allowing the player to combat in real time, rather than really any turn-based strategy. The game was well-received by critics, but would continue the trend of Fallout games featuring game-breaking bugs. Sadly, this trend would just continue on. Fallout New Vegas was developed by Obsidian Entertainment, and it was released on October 19, 2010. The game was developed by many people who had developed Fallout 1 and 2. In fact, a lot of Fallout fans and purists consider it the sequel to Fallout 1 and 2. The game was not actually a direct sequel to Fallout 3 either. Instead, it focuses on a courier in the Mojave Wasteland. This time, the player begins the game as a courier after he's shot in the head and left for dead. Fallout 4 is the latest game in the series. It was released November 10th, 2015. Thus far, it's received mostly positive reviews, but also continues the series' trend of unfortunate bugs. New Vegas, by the way, probably the worst in the series for that. Fallout 4, despite all of its issues, continues to sell extremely strongly. This is a franchise that shows no signs of stopping or anything else, and it's expected that Bethesda is going to continue entries. In fact, I'd bet on it.
I'm President John Henry Eden, and you're listening to Enclave Radio, the voice of warmth and reason in this cold unreasonable world.
Thanks for that wonderful Just the Facts, Ryan, and letting us know all about the wonders of the Fallout universe. So
I hate
much
you.
Appreciated. Oh, okay. fuck your Just the Facts, then.
You're going back in the vault. So Fallout, this is a franchise. Surprisingly, I've actually had history since the 90s, but didn't really start to get back into it until the last generation of consoles. My first Fallout experience, that's what we're going to talk about now, is everyone's first experience with the games. My friend Jamie during high school brought over this cracked copy of the game or something, and it was the first Fallout game. And that's when it was this top-down, isometric kind of role-playing game. And I remember playing it on my good old compact Presario, and it didn't grab me. I thought the idea behind the world was really, really, really cool, but it just, for whatever reason, I just could not care any less about it, which kind of sucked, because I was...
Sorry, can anybody hear that? I think it's my blood pressure exploding.
Well, to be fair, that's a time when I was heavy in the Star Wars and Shadowrun, but I did like the idea of the universe of Fallout, especially some of the aesthetic designs, because I remember the first Fallout game had that big Brotherhood of Steel power armor guy on the like front of it, thinking, man, that looks really cool, and I've never seen anything like that before. Because I'd never seen any of the retro 50s ideas in like popular media at that time. And it would be years upon years later when I was doing stuff for Clear Channel in the U.S. when I was working for 1150 AM WIMA, I reviewed Fallout 3's DLC and New Vegas, and I just kind of plowed through it thinking, all right, this is whatever. Excuse me. Sorry. Really sorry. And it wouldn't be until Fallout 4 came out just a couple of weeks ago that it really absorbed me. As of this recording, what did I say? I was about 140 hours into it.
Yeah, that was what you gave us.
Something like that. So, and as Andrew said, luckily I haven't had a corrupted save file yet. Thank Christ for that.
Oh, yeah. Good for you. So happy for you.
And it's just, the more I explore this world, the more I'm kind of getting into it, because I really enjoy Bethesda games, and that's mostly because of Skyrim. Because that game made Blair a widow for the better part of, like, 2 years. She used to walk around the house going, Mike, no more Rim. And I'd be like, you can't stop the Dragonborn, and arrows to the knee and all that shit. And Fallout, as I started playing it, I'm like, man, this is on, you know, the Xbox One. I'm liking this a lot more. It seems to run a lot faster and smoother than it did on the 360. And I'm wandering around because the world is so much bigger than what I expected. And it's basically Skyrim, but with guns. And I'm just having fun blowing through the game right now with, not going to lie, I am using a number of exploits and cheats.
You're summing up everything I despise about what they've done to this franchise.
Mike, your first misstep was saying the B word. Don't say Bethesda around Ryan, or else he goes
into a rage. As soon as he said Skyrim with guns.
I like it. It's really fun. Although a dragon is way tougher than any Deathclaw I've ever fought.
What? The dragons are pussies in Skyrim. They're so easy to kill.
Some of those ancient ones are tough motherfuckers. When you're above level 80, unless you're buffed as shit, they can be a bit of a fight. And the dragon when you fight from the DLC, the fucking Dragonborn DLC, that's a bitch and a half. That fight sucked with Mirak. Anyway, I really, really got back into it, and doing prep for the show, watched a bunch of videos on YouTube, and I'm kind of getting back into this series. I'm definitely going to give it a second look. I may go back and replay Fallout 3 and New Vegas on the 360, as I know if you bought Fallout 4... for the Xbox One, anyway, you got a free downloadable copy of Fallout 3. So definitely a reason to go back and revisit that. Hopefully the DLC will become compatible with the Xbox One. According to Microsoft, they still haven't figured that out yet, how to do DLC. But it's on the publisher to make it work, as opposed to Microsoft themselves. So whether Bethesda wants to make more money, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
If only there was some sort of wonderful gaming machine that would allow you to play every game for the past like 30, 40 years made on it. Alas, if only one could invent such a thing.
See, I don't know. But then again, we'll kind of get into that because I prefer console gaming to PC, and I always have.
Uh-oh.
That's a debate topic for the prototype, definitely, for sure.
No, because I really don't want to get involved in a flame war.
Jeez, I'm just going to put on a helmet and like hide in the corner. Maybe I need my own power armor because it's going to get nasty.
I love consoles. I really do. All right, Andrew, what about you? Where does your history start with Fallout?
Well, I started playing Fallout 3 because it came out when I was in high school. And you get a pass,
by the way. You were 5 when Fallout 1 came out.
Yeah. I've heard great things about the original games, and I do eventually intend on playing them. Right now, Mike, I'm afraid to do anything with this computer because it's going to explode. So wait until I get a better PC, then I'm going to, even though it doesn't take much to run those original games. Anyways, side note, I lost many an hours just exploring the wasteland Fallout 3, and I've pretty much been with the series since then. Fallout 3 is, the storyline sucks, but all the DLC is amazing. I really like the DLC for that game, and New Vegas was, like, my favorite of the series so far. And Fallout 4 is really good so far, except for blood bugs and those goddamn save and file corruptions that happen on a regular basis in my playthroughs. So there's that. But, yeah, that's my history of the series.
All right, Ryan, you have the longest history with this, so walk us through it.
I remember way back when. No, anyway. So in 97, a demo came out, and I think I got it from PC Gamer. This is way back when demos came on discs, kids. So it was, I think it was, yeah, not I think, I know, it was just Junktown, which is a single location in Fallout 1. And I really remember like playing that repeatedly, usually with my friend Trevor, around that kind of thing on my computer. And it had me with the VAT system and the sort of like tactical strategy basis of the combat system. So it was turn-based strategy, but it was a fair amount of tactics and that kind of thing involved with it. And then in addition to that, the fact that if you built your character right, you could get out of things just by talking or that kind of thing. Like it was, I still consider Fallout 2 one of the very few true role-playing games in the last 20 years. And like Fallout 1 just blew me away at the time with what you could do and that kind of thing with it. And even to this day, I mean, I remember certain characters, encounters, and how I felt and that kind of thing. Like your first conversation with the Master, or really the first time you meet super mutants, or the first time you get power armor, that kind of thing. Or they're even, you know, first time you meet the Brotherhood of Steel and you've got to go into the glow, et cetera, et cetera. Like all this stuff that I found really memorable. And then a year later, Fallout 2 came out. And I remember playing the hell out of it. It's debatably better, but it's weighed down by a lot of pop culture references and in-jokes. For example, in Fallout 2, we learned that a computer kind of started the whole nuclear war, and the computer's name was Skynet. That's a little referential to, you know, something else.
That's a little too close to home, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that, although there's a lot of funny stuff, too. Like, you can come across a crashed shuttlecraft with a bunch of red shirts. You can get a quest from the Guardian of Forever, which is actually pretty funny. You go back in time, by the way, and you break the water chip from the original Fallout and set into motion Fallout 1 and 2. But, I played the hell out of 2. And then I actually played the spinoffs. Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel was the last Interplay made one that hit PC. And it was a good game. It was the first Fallout game that was really plagued with bugs. Like 1 and 2 had issues in terms of quest lines that couldn't be completed or stuff that didn't do anything or didn't do what it was supposed to do. But Tactics was the first one that actively crashed on me and deleted saves, earning it the nickname Fallout Crash Sticks from me and my friends. But it was still a good game, and it was the first one to incorporate a real-time combat. You could still do turn-based, and actually there are a couple of missions where it's beneficial to switch back and forth between them. But it was still neat, and there were still times when you could use dialogue or objects to get out of combat. And I don't know, it felt like still felt true to the series. And then the next game wasn't remotely true to the series. It was developed for the Xbox and PS2. The first console Fallout game, and that was it was just called Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, not to be confused with Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel. Brotherhood of Steel was a terrible isometric action game that just had a whole bunch of heavy metal music, and it was just awful. Nothing about it played correctly or played well. Just a ton of issues, and terrible, terrible game. And then there was a giant lull, because that was 2004, if I remember right. And that would be the last game Interplay would publish in the series. And then I played Fallout 3, which... Fallout 3 is a really good game. I had a lot of bugs and, like, crashes on it. But I still played the hell out of it. I still really enjoyed it. And Andrew is right, by the way. The DLC is way better than the main storyline. The main storyline never grabbed me at all.
Yeah, that's why I did all the DLC first.
Yeah. My biggest issue with it, though, even though it was a good game, I don't feel like it was a good Fallout game. It didn't maintain a lot of what made the series and the originals good, and that is subtlety, characters, and writing. And a lot of that faltered, especially in the main quest. The best example I can give, and remember, I played the game early on, like after it came out, before it was patched, and there was DLC and level, caps raised. Ugh, and I'm trying to remember. But anyway, the sequence of events that just pissed me off and took me out of it from being a Fallout game was the end of the game, when you've got to send somebody into the chamber. And there's a super mutant companion in the game that you can get who the radiation wouldn't affect. And you can't actually send him in. He would just say, no, this is your story. What?
Yeah, that seems a little...
What the hell?
Eventually they did reverse that, though.
Yeah, but it had to be... Yeah, it was after DLC and patching, which was just stupid, though. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that was well known for... versatility and well known for being able to kind of do things the way you want it.
And lore,
they really took that out.
One of the things I'd like to note about Fallout is that is one of the series, at least to me, seems like it's really consistent with its lore. Like, it's incredibly deep. And you can find references between each game, and if you listen to some of the audio files or read all the terminal computers and all that shit, everything is connected.
Yeah, which is another, sort of, like, issue I had, is that, for the most part, 3 wasn't connected. There were data pads and, like, computer terminals and that kind of thing that hinted at events in Fallout 1 and 2, and that's fine. But a lot of the stuff in the game didn't jive with it. I'll get to that in a second, but...
Super mutants in general, right? Because, like,
super mutants were created by the forced evolutionary virus, the FEV virus, in Fallout 1 by the master dumping
Vault,
people
like 11 or something
into vats. Yeah. And so how the hell did they just happen to develop exactly the same out east? I realize, you know, it's the FEV virus, and this was airborne, and this was supposedly the Enclave working on it. But that was the other problem, too, is the Enclave out east were a fair amount different from the ones out west that we knew. Not to mention the president also appeared in Fallout 2 and was completely different. That's another thing, by the way, that I'll get at in a second. But anyway, yeah, and I played New Vegas, which I loved New Vegas. For anyone who doesn't know, it was developed by a lot of the same people that did 1 and 2, and it very much had the flavor of Fallout and the versatility. You could talk your way out of so many different things, not to mention if you had, you know, some of the luck perks and that kind of thing. You could literally luck your way through a good portion of the game, which was pretty funny. And it restored a lot of that versatility that I had missed in 3. Four, I have not played. Part of the reason is I'm sick of being Bethesda's bug tester, and they hate me.
Aren't you, like, supposedly blacklisted by them?
Yeah, one of my persona, actually probably all of them at this point. There's a few companies I'm blacklisted by. Activision still doesn't like me. Whatever. Just because I said the Call of Duty series is holding, quote, holding video gaming back as a medium doesn't mean they should dislike. Oh, okay, maybe. But yeah, I haven't got around to Fallout 4. From what I know of it, it's a lot stronger effort. I'm actually looking forward to playing it, and I'm sure I will at some point. And they've restored a lot of the things I didn't like. But I mean, I talked about it a bit before the show. I think my other issue with Fallout 3 was it was very much a rehash of ideas and things from 1 and 2. It offered nothing new to the series in terms of factions, enemies, and that kind of thing. It really was just kind of Skyrim with a makeover and to Fallout eyes everything. Like, it just didn't do enough different or add enough to it for me, and that really bugged me. I realize there's some people that would piss the purists off, but I'm not really one of them, and I don't really care.
Right. There were a few little things that I thought were pretty interesting. I think that 3 had some good stuff with vaults. Like, there was the one vault for the story mission you had to go in that was all, like, a virtual reality kind of thing. Which led to, like, an interesting series of quests. So, like, I didn't think it was all terrible.
No, I don't think it's all terrible, but there's a lot of that. Like, Little Lamplight's one of the worst locations in any role-playing game, period.
Oh, God. That's the one, like, where it's all the kids,
it's all, right? The kids who apparently suffer from Tourette's. And it's
fucking
just,
hate that place.
It was so poorly written, and that just drove me nuts. There was that. I didn't like the fact that a lot of the meeting super mutants or death claws in 1 and 2 meant something, and then in 3 you can just kind of mow them down easily. That really bugged me. I know that's been restored somewhat in 4, thankfully. Like, difficulty is back up. That's good. But yeah, that was one thing that bugged me. Just, I don't know, a lot of minor things. Like, a lot of the ideas were just taken from the originals. I would have preferred it if they had just said, you know what, we're not the same company, we're going to put our own stamp on it. But they really didn't. They just tried to rehash 1 and 2 under...
Would you say it was more of an... Do you think it was more of a hook to get people into the games? Because it did rehash a lot of things.
Maybe, but I also think... I hate to say it, but I mean, Bethesda's almost been trapped over the past few years. They're very much turning into another Treyarch and, other guys who develop Call of Duty.
Sledgehammer Games? Well, no, they're a fairly new company.
Can't remember. It's Treyarch and somebody else. Infinity Ward.
Yeah.
Remember when it was just Treyarch and Infinity Ward and they would just alternate Call of Duty titles and that's all they could ever do? It's starting to feel like that's what Bethesda's falling into. They're very much either, okay, this is our Elder Scrolls year and this is our Fallout year. And because of that, the games start to blur together as well. And I think that's an issue with companies in terms of their development, though. I mean, you can't do Madden every year and not be tired of developing a Madden game all the time.
Yeah, it's basically hard to produce a yearly title and have it bring something new to the franchise.
Assassin's Creed.
I was actually just about to bring that up. Ubisoft, I like what they bring every year, but the engine...
Assassin's Creed.
But the engine isn't moving forward, though, really.
Yeah, see, I haven't cared about Assassin's Creed since 2. Like, I
4 is amazing, and
that.
Rogue is amazing.
I played 4. It seemed fine, but
Syndicate's
like,
really good.
Not enough to bring me back.
Yeah, Syndicate's really good. It's just... It continues the, let's add a couple things, and this is really just the previous game. Although at least it's not a buggy mess like Unity was. And that's kind of the other thing, too, with Bethesda. I mean, what is wrong with you guys? Do you even playtest this shit?
I'm wondering if...
There's no excuse for corrupted saves. Like, I had a ton of problems with 3. New Vegas crashed and corrupted saves on me. By the way, 3 had one of my favorites. It's because I picked up an item that I wasn't supposed to be able to. Which, by the way, goes back to the whole, like, this is a role-playing game. I should be able to do things whatever I want in whatever order I want. And it caused, like, it crashed the game and it's corrupted all my saves without me knowing. And I didn't know that every save afterwards as well was corrupt. Good times.
Now, what causes that kind of a corruption? Now, one of my ideas, and I'm not really sure. Is it because the world is so big, there's so many variables, the game just gets confused?
I think that's a part of it, but my problem with that is, look at the other games. Can you tell me that the Fallout world in, say, 2 and 3 in New Vegas is larger than Metal Gear and more detailed than Metal Gear Solid 5?
I can argue that from this. When you kill someone in Metal Gear Solid 5, their weapons and they eventually disappear. I've run across bodies in Fallout that I killed hours ago.
That's true. In 4 they don't, but I'm pretty sure in 3 they disappear. Like, I don't think bodies are stay in 3.
Also, whenever you loot them in 3, they disappear. If you leave stuff on them, they'll stay there.
Oh.
But alternatively, like something like Metal Gear, where if there's a mission, say, involving a helicopter picking somebody up, that helicopter exists in the game world the whole time.
Yeah.
You can go blow it up before the mission or before accepting it and just say, like...
You can do that in Fallout 4, too, because I've done missions. I'm like, oh, fuck, why am I able to complete this already?
Then at least 4, to a certain extent, will be
more open-ended.
Excused from that. But, I mean, it doesn't excuse 3 in New Vegas. Yeah. I mean, it's poor programming. And there have been huge and detailed games in that. Look at the Just Cause series. Just Cause 2.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Years ago. And the amount of detail in everything in that game. And it still has one of the largest game maps, period. And just next to no bugs, because Avalanche is really good at, you know, taking their time and programming. Obviously, like, part of that is programming on the PC first kind of helps, but I don't know. Like, it's just frustrating to me. And I know I've ranted at Andrew for this. It bothers me that this isn't an issue for people. I mean, where is the incentive for game developers to do better with this stuff? If you sell 5 million copies within the first week, which is what 4 did. Like, where's the incentive? I'm tired of, and Avalanche, who I just mentioned, is guilty of this right now. I'm tired of day one patches. Like, why are you releasing something that's not complete? It's actually making me miss the days of, you know, NES, that kind of thing, where...
It has to work as it goes to print sort of
thing. And I mean, to be fair, like, there were games that were released then that were broken, and that really sucks. But nowadays we have the internet to know if something is broken, and the company doesn't get let off the hook with, well, we'll just release a patch later. Like, the first patch for Fallout 4 just came out this past week. And
Oh, thank God.
It fixed some of the issues, but apparently not all. And just,
There are still a number of exploits. There's even game breaking bugs.
I just find it frustrating. When I pay $10 to go see a movie, I expect to be able to watch the film and it to not stop halfway through and then restart. If I pay $60 for something, I sure as hell expect not to have issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand why this isn't a bigger deal. And it frustrates me, too, as the reviewer standpoint of me. I seem to be one of the last people left that hammers games for being buggy. It feels like it's just me and PC Gamer, and that's about it. Half the reviews don't even mention issues or that kind of thing anymore, and I find that really frustrating and disingenuous to the public, especially whenever they're going to be buying the game day one. Like, there's such an emphasis on pre-orders in the gaming industry, and to me, this is a big problem. It's just frustrating. Arkham Knight's a great example of it. I mean, they're going to be giving refunds for that until the end of the year now. That's just been a complete mess for them because they can't seem to fix it. And I don't know. I don't know why Bethesda gets a free pass. They make good games in the long term, but at launch, they're broken.
Yeah, because I remember Skyrim having a number of issues too, and it wasn't until a patch came out that I could complete part of a DLC. In fact, it was actually because of a glitch.
Yeah.
I was able to go back and finish one of the quests that gave me my perfect gamer score because I'm like, oh, fuck, this is fucked up. But a glitch happened, so it worked out in my favor. They're like, all right, cool, now I can finally complete this. And it sucks, though, because open world games like Fallout, there's so many things that you want to explore, you want to do, you want to see, but there's so many problems. Like Andrew was saying, there is the corruption of save files.
Yeah, or whenever I have this problem where I have the Mysterious Stranger perk, which is like my favorite
Yay.
Perk. And every time it appears, like there's a 50-50 chance that it'll break my game. And I get so mad because it's my favorite part of that. Like any perk, Mysterious Stranger is my favorite perk.
That was in all the old games too, by the way.
That's pretty kick-ass.
I love it when he just like unloads like the full round. Unfortunately, in four, in three they would have it where like he would empty a full like thing of his revolver even if the person was dead, and he would just like keep shooting the body. And this one, it's like one shot, and then he like leaves, which is kind of disappointing. But it leads to some fun things if you have Nikki Valentine as a companion.
Yeah, I thought that was clever.
Because he keeps going like, hey, who the hell is that guy? Where did he come from?
And then he there was one interaction I had with the stranger and Nick Valentine. He's like, yay, you stop right there. And he tried to arrest him. And I'm thinking, man, that's really clever. I mean, if Fallout does anything right, or at least with the Bethesda games, I like how they hide little things in there like that. I mean, especially with unique companion dialogue.
Yeah, I'm not trying to tear them apart here. Like, they do a lot of things right. And I did say, like, Fallout 3 is a good game. It just lost a lot of the essence of what made the other ones. And they missed a chance to kind of put their own stamp on it. I mean, like I say, I haven't really played much of 4. But I'm hoping that that's what they've done with this one and kind of made it their own, finally.
From what I've experienced so far, I know how the main game ends because I have to. And I think New Vegas' storyline was better. But at the same time, the world is more interesting because there's a lot more to do. The only problem is before the ending, what faction you side with doesn't really matter.
Can you keep playing after you beat the game in 4?
Yes.
Oh, thank Christ.
So much like Skyrim.
I friggin' hated that in New Vegas. It doesn't let you play afterwards, and I'm pretty sure 3 it doesn't let you play afterwards either.
3 did after the DLC / fixed ending. Also, you could send Charon or one of your other companions in, and then they would die, and you'd continue on, but you'd kind of be a scumbag, which is a downer. Yeah. 1 and 2, yeah, that's where it started, where you could keep playing after the game was over.
See, that's good.
Not to mention the dialogue and everything would change. Like, people would congratulate you or talk to you based on your decisions. Not to mention, I mean, your decisions in that game, in those two games, mattered. You'd get an ending for each, you know, companion or each city, which was nice. And you got that in 3 as well.
Vegas did that as well.
Yeah.
You can have companions in 1 and 2, like.
Yes.
Nice.
That's where dog meat came from. For example,
does anybody have any favorite companions that you always keep with you?
The one that I really liked the most, and I don't know why I really kind of dug her, was Kate from Fallout 4.
Yes.
Now, I'm in a lesbian relationship with her. I gave her my wedding ring that I have for my dead husband.
Oh, I sold that, like, first
time. It's weird. I have this really weird
mental
thing.
Note, don't marry Andrew.
My character fucks everything that moves. But I only gave my ring to her. Right now, my goal is to grab all the companion-only perks. And then once I've done that, me and Kate are going to go on a wild gun spree through the wasteland.
How many companions are there in 4?
13 or 14.
Jesus Christ.
And you can romance like 7 or 8 of them.
Can you romance any of the robots?
I don't know yet. I haven't gotten those guys yet.
What about dog meat?
That's bestiality, Andrew. And that is wrong! We are not fucking dogs. My God, I can't believe I'm saying that. What the hell is wrong with you?
I was just asking.
Please find a way to work that into the write-up for this. And we romance dog meat, .. You sick bastard.
Anyway,
well, folks, that's our show.
trying to get back on track. No, I don't know. For me, Dog Meat is one from the original game, although he would appear again in the cafe of Fallout 1 characters, basically, in the second game, so I had him there. From the second game, there's Sulik, who you could sell into slavery if you're a horrible human being early on. Did I mention that, like, the second game was, like, true role-playing? You could do awful things that I won't even, like, talk about, many of which are completely illegal in video games now, and deservedly so. But I just liked having Sulik around, though. I don't know. He entertained me. Marcus, who is a super mutant, would be one of your companions in the second game as well, too, and I really liked him. Also, he was voiced by Michael Dorn, which is a huge plus.
One of the guys in Fallout 4, one of the super mutant companions that you can get, is a guy named Strong. He's voiced by Goku. That's Sean Schemmel doing his voice,
I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, nice. I'm actually going to message Sean on Facebook later. I'm like, you just killed a dog with a hammer. How do you feel? But I think that is kind of cool.
I liked Boone in...
Boone is the best.
Yeah.
New Vegas. Boone
yeah,
is
I liked him. And, yeah, man, he's hard to keep alive, though.
I just
ended up sending him away on occasion.
That's something Fallout 4 did that the other Fallout games haven't. Your companions cannot die. And Pete Hines, the guy at Bethesda, said, we didn't want to ruin the roleplay experience because you were worried about reloading a save if your companion happened to die. I like having consequences, though.
The only issue with that is in 4, when you send your companion away,
you can lose them.
Half of your companions won't fucking show up. Dog meat is missing. I have no idea where dog meat is.
Have you built a doghouse?
I built 7 fucking doghouses. He's not there. He doesn't come.
Typically, he will show up in Sanctuary or Red Rocket.
He sent him to Sanctuary, but hey, whatever. He'll show up when I need him for a quest. That's what happened my last playthrough, too. Like, I lost dog meat, and then he showed up when I needed him for a quest. And I was like, okay.
I lost Nick Valentine the other night, and it was right towards the end of a story quest. And the only reason he showed back up is because I was doing his personal mission, where you have to track down that ghoul gangster. And that took me the better part of a night to do. But anyway, it's always little things. But still, I do like how the companions in Fallout are more memorable than anybody you ever got in Skyrim.
Can you get companions in Skyrim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but they offer no unique dialogue, really. They're just your house Jarl.
And oh, those guys.
Pretty much and people you can randomly romance. Here, at least the characters are actually kind of fleshed out.
Also, they're actually useful. I mean, that was one thing with Skyrim. The companions in that they didn't really do much. They soak up damage if you're lucky, and that's about it.
And they carry stuff.
Yeah.
In Fallout 3, I would have Fox as my companion, and I would go anywhere, and he would just kill everything. Like, I could just go unarmed everywhere, because Fox just has a ridiculous, like, laser minigun that just destroyed everything.
It should be noted, in terms of negatives for Fallout 1 and 2, never give any of your companions guns. That's probably why I liked Sulik, is because he doesn't use sidearms or anything. Because, my God, they will just shoot, like, through you, and it was very annoying. The AI, not so good.
And that's another thing with Bethesda games. The AI seems to be borderlining on wearing a helmet to school, which is unfortunate. Now,
I don't know. I thought Forza AI was all right.
I've seen mine make some monumentally stupid moves, but
yeah, it says Andrew who can't find his dog.
Okay, well, fuck that dog. I hate it. It's not coming.
You're a terrible person, Andrew.
I can't
all right,
romance it if I can't find him.
You're wow. All right,
can we go to commercial?
Definitely changing tracks now. All right, so one of the cool things about Fallout that I really like, it's the world that it's created and.
Or destroyed.
It's the world you know up until just after World War II. Around the 1960s, things really start to take a change, and it goes down this alternate history path. And I'm surprised how much minute detail they've kind of put into it. And obviously, you could see references from, like, the Road Warrior and the Terminator in there. But I like how it actually kind of goes into detail about why China invades Alaska, stuff like that. What happens to the United States as opposed to having the 50 states, there's the 13 Commonwealth colonies.
Also, they annexed us in Fallout 1's intro.
Yep, they're like, yep, we need troops there to get rid of the Chinese. So guess what, Canada? Too bad. And stuff like that, and just how they detail what would happen if resources just ran out. Stuff like that. I mean, how the European Union basically goes to the Middle East. They're like, you're going to give us that or else. And that doesn't work out too well for the Middle East because they get nuked. And that obviously puts a lot of people on edge. But the cool thing about the world is Fallout has a very unique aesthetic where it's like this post-World War II, but before the 1960s, happy aesthetic. And it's the whole Red Scare thing where everyone's scared of the communists, but it's all happy, cheery, white picket fences and Leave It to Beaver shit. And I've never seen that done in any media before Fallout. I've never would have ever put that together. The happy, cheery world in a nuclear wasteland.
And some sort of merger of like the steampunk aesthetic with post-apocalyptic Mad Max. Like you mentioned that, it's super heavily influenced by Mad Max, amongst others. But yeah, I mean, I mentioned the Skynet computer earlier. It's influenced by just pulp culture, and it's that weird sort of melding, like New Reno in Fallout 2. You can find a number of different columns written about it. There have been a couple people who say that, you know, they consider that the best city or hub in all of video games. And it's another area that's just chock full of different pop culture references as well as real life references and things that are there now. But yeah, it's got a neat history. And for anyone, I think it's the easiest place I always find it is a website called No Mutants Allowed, NMA. And anyway, they've got copies of, in PDF form, the Fallout Bible written by people who worked on Fallout 1 and 2, and the actual like series and exactly, you know, what happened and that kind of thing. And it's a really interesting read for anyone who's interested in the lore and everything, as well as actually Kotaku and a couple others with the release of Fallout 4 did columns recently on Van Buren. Van Buren was famously Fallout 3, developed by or made by Interplay and Black Isle. Before Interplay would go under. So yeah, somebody else was originally making Fallout 3 way back when.
And that game got scrapped and it was like 95% done, didn't it?
Yeah, it was fairly well, it was a good way through. You can actually find online, if you really look for it, you can find like entire cities and stuff that were completed. And there's some people that are trying to like work on it. It had a really interesting storyline.
Weren't parts of that worked into New Vegas, too?
Yeah, they would end up using a lot of the ideas and some of the locations and that kind of thing. It also had, like, a super dark ending where basically you couldn't stop a missile launch and you had to choose which cities would be completely destroyed.
Oh, wow.
The best you could do was kind of, like, triage and kind of, I don't know, try and save as many people as you can, not to mention choose who lives and dies, literally. And yeah, it's just interesting. And then some more of their ideas ended up being used in Pillars of Eternity, which came out this year, another like role-playing game. But yeah, there's a number of different kind of fun ones. So yeah, that's something that fans should really look up. It's an interesting read, and I don't know, it would have been neat to see where the series would have gone.
One of the things that I really like about Fallout is a lot of the different factions. I like how the vaults are a massive social experiment, and I thought that was really interesting. How, yeah, you get to survive the apocalypse, but maybe you're a clone, you're going to turn into a plant person, you're going to become a mutant, or you're going to live in a virtual reality tortured by a 13-year-old girl who's actually like an old man. But still, there's weird, crazy shit like that. And I thought that was so incredibly cool. Dark as fuck. I mean, these games are seriously dark.
The vaults were social experiments put together by the Enclave, as in like the actual Enclave, Fallout 2's Enclave/government. And yeah, it was just sort of, yeah. There's some really dark ones in that game as well, too.
What ones? Like, name some.
There was one.
No.
The one vault I thought was really interesting, and I'm just going to give you a taste of it. It involves them challenging authority. and they have to sacrifice one person every year or everybody dies. And there's a twist to it. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, that's dark. And that's really what made me appreciate the series a lot more from a lore standpoint, because they've done so much with it. But other neat things that has happened with the franchise, as I was mentioning with factions, is how the Brotherhood of Steel, they want to protect technology, but even within their group of individuals, the West Coast, the people that are in the NCR, feel very different from the people that are on the East Coast, kind of Brotherhood of Steel. And they don't necessarily get along so well.
West Side.
Yeah, because they're from the Northern California Northern California Republic, right, Ryan? That's what it stands for? NCR?
NCR, yeah.
Yeah. And they would send these giant airships across the country, but when they got to the East Coast, they started taking in Wastelanders, and eventually it became to the point where we're here to save you. Protecting technology has become very secondary. And that's very much against the code of the Brotherhood of Steel. I'm thinking, man, that's really interesting.
Man, yeah, Fallout 4 Brotherhood of Steel is just a big bag of dicks. They're mean. I don't like them.
There's another one that I like. I think this was from Fallout 2. I think, Ryan, you're probably going to have to correct me on this. Where there's the guy who runs Denver, Caesar, and his legion.
That's New Vegas.
Yeah. That, I think, is tremendously fucking cool.
Yeah, we were talking about, if you're talking about memorable moments in the series, when you first go to Lipton in that game, it's amazing. That was one of my favorite Fallout moments, period. And yeah, the Brotherhood of Steel, the faction sort of emerged. That was an idea presented in Fallout Tactics. And yeah, the ones out west have good reason. Like, they were introducing technology really slowly and kind of nudging humanity. But then the Enclave emerged and kind of started wiping them out and causing a lot of issues. They had good reason to kind of be afraid of technology and people using it. And then along came first the Vault Dweller and then the Chosen One, who like really messed stuff up. But yeah, I don't know. The Brotherhood of Steel at West was definitely the more hardcore group. Yes.
Okay, so we're going to start to kind of wind things down here on the show, and I want to talk about the future of the franchise. I think there's so much potential for this franchise to become so much bigger than what it is. I'd love to see this in some bigger media, if possible. And I kind of wonder if, in a way, could this be a television show? If you fleshed out the world the right way, could you pull it off?
I don't think so, because so much of it is built on, like, it works as its own on a universe, but a lot of the elements of the universe are from other already existing pop culture franchises.
Yep.
So there would be a tendency
by George Miller. Oh, look.
Yeah, pretty much, because there's so many similarities.
I don't know, because I think if you adapted it right, or if you set it so long after the other games, because Fallout 4 happens 200 years after the war, you could, in theory, do it. It takes place 10 years after Fallout 3, I think.
I think if you went the other way and you detailed out the fall, leave out a lot of the self-referential or the pop culture stuff that Fallout 2 did, I think you could do something with that. I think a film may... I'd prefer to see a TV show, but I think a lot of it would be expensive as well, too.
Yeah, a lot of set design.
Like it's not just set design, too. You're talking about, you know, mutants and everybody's got to be different, look different, that kind of thing.
See, my issue is the fun of those games in that universe is my choices.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't feel like seeing a movie version of that would be that enjoyable.
The solution is obvious. We get the movie theaters from Futurama, where you can press a button and it makes a choice based on what everybody votes for.
Yeah, but most people are stupid, so oh, yeah. I don't want that.
Should Calculon race to this firefight at the special effects factory? Or B, do you want him to continue doing his boring, tedious paperwork? You have selected B. I love that show.
same reason why I'm not really interested in a Mass Effect movie or TV show, because what I do matters in that universe, not what someone else does.
Yeah, I would like to see the story of Commander Shepard at some point, but I've already played it. But yeah, I don't know. Just I want to see Fallout get bigger.
What if Commander Shepard is A, male Shepard, and B, commits genocide with the Rachni? I think that that'd make me very unhappy.
I played as male Shepard, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, you also want a romance dog meat.
And also Mr. Handy, because I don't call him Mr. Handy for nothing.
Oh, my God.
Why do we give you a microphone?
That's kind of what I'm questioning now. Andrew and his... See, this is what Fallout does. It brings out the dark side of humanity. You're the fucking enclave, Andrew. There's a vault out there where everybody... I'm not even going to finish this sentence. It's way too fucked up to say aloud.
As for the future, I mean... Bethesda's going to continue on with the games. I'd like to see... he recently left. I'd like to see Left Obsidian, that is. I'd like to see Chris Avellone at some point get another chance, or Fergus, or one of the other guys who created the earlier ones, or some of the original writers get a chance to either do some DLC or an offshoot or something. But, I mean, having said that, like a lot of people, even some of the old-school Fallout purists, are enjoying 4. So I don't know what you're laughing at. Anyway.
I was coughing.
Oh, well, stop breathing. So a lot of the other like purists and that kind of thing have seemed to be enjoying 4. So it sounds like they're kind of back on the right track. Like, I like a lot of the decisions I've read about and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I'm hopeful for it. I know, and I'm okay with the days of – I'm not one of those people that's just mad that it's not an isometric strategy game. I do miss that, but I mean that genre is being represented with other stuff. Like XCOM is back. Pillars of Eternity is sort of very much an old school RPG. Like there's enough of the other stuff too that I'm all right with it. But I don't know. I miss some of the flexibility though. Like some of the stuff I've heard that sneaking is pretty much useless in Fallout 4. It's not a particularly used skill, and losing some of that stuff again kind of stinks. But.
Yeah, like for example, you could really sneak around in Skyrim. It was a viable strategy. Here in Fallout 4,
even though all you were doing was ducking, by the way.
Yeah. Or moving really slow.
At least it's not as bad in 3, where you could like be standing, like you could go into a room, then just go behind somebody where it's like detected, and then choose to wait 4 hours, and they would suddenly not know you're there anymore. And then you just pickpocket them and go about your business.
Good times had by all. Yeah.
That's where my stuff at work keeps going.
Yeah. One of the things I'd like to see, and I know we were talking about it, is because I'm heavily into pen and paper role playing, I'd like to see this really developed into a game, but I understand there was difficulties with game publisher Steve Jackson Games.
Well, I don't know specifically what happens. Like, it was the original Fallout was supposed to be a GURPS-based RPG on the PC, and that kind of, for whatever reason, that fell through. Since then, like, in terms of pen and paper, I mean, there's been a couple of releases and that kind of thing, but I don't think there's been anything, like, completely official. I mean, there's a...
Maybe like game like GURPS, you could very easily make this world if you had the right kind of supplements.
Yeah, there was Exodus, which like disappeared pretty quickly, and then Fallout was pulled from the licensing and everything else. So it was dropped after a legal problem. Part of that was the Bethesda changeover, and the only like really fleshed out one was Fallout Warfare, and that came with copies of Fallout Tactics. Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel, and it was based on kind of that game world and that area of the Fallout universe. So, I mean, that's one that did get released and is sort of official, but, I mean, it's also old, and it's not super widely distributed or around anymore.
Yeah, because I've never heard of it.
Well, I think you can still get copies of it. The only place I can think of would be Good Old Games, because... Whenever you buy games there, you get all of the original manuals or everything, but I'm not sure if that would be covered under it. That might be another rights issue with Bethesda, and it may just be gone by the wayside now, which would really suck, because I think the special system's really good. I'm not necessarily sure how it would translate. I think you'd almost have to translate it to a D20. I know you were saying D10. I'm not a huge fan. I just don't know if it would work.
I'm thinking with the special system, if you wanted to keep it really simple, yeah, you could use a D20 variant and just use the, like, open game license and mod it to fit your world, because perks were translate very easily into feats.
Yeah, I was going to say that, too, that, yeah, the perks kind of change things, too, so...
But yeah, I mean, it's a world that I would love to play in, and I was—I know we've talked about this off air with the Terrible Warriors crew. For example, Justin has—he played a Fallout game with him and his friends set in the wastelands of Hamilton, like years back, and we'd love to revisit that world because now me, Derek, and Justin all have Pip Boys.
Wouldn't that just basically be Hamilton? I mean, not much would change.
Well, I don't know. I guess there are the rad roaches down on King Street, and the mole rats up on James. But yeah, like, it would be interesting to make, to see an official pen and paper role-playing game. And I actually posted this question earlier before, too, online and on Twitter, is why is there not the Elder Scrolls, an actual pen and paper role-playing game? And I think it comes down to rights and similarities between Dungeons and Dragons and all that shit.
And they want everyone hooked on Elder Scrolls Online.
I just want to play pen and paper. But then again, the pen and paper role-playing industry is actually very, very, very small, unless you're Wizards of the Coast or Paizo, for example. But I do want to see Fallout in, like, other media. Like I said, I would love to see a TV show or a movie or maybe even a Fallout comic book. Or something like that. Because, you know, it doesn't cost anything to really draw anything. You don't have to build sets. You just have to hire artists.
The Fallout movie just sort of stops halfway through. And then they restart it. And then it skips to the end. And then you think everything's characters just disappear halfway through and don't reappear.
And certain theaters get their save files, you know, corrupted. And then there's Andrew's romance dog ending in one of them.
I just found out that you, one of the robots you meet that is a Mr. Handy, you can romance, named Curie. She's a lovely lady.
Oh, my God.
just telling you.
On that note, look for my review of Fallout 4 beginning tomorrow night. It'll probably be live, I'm hoping, before 9 o'clock. So be looking for that on thisweekingeek.net. Couple of show notes to announce. We are going to be releasing a topic show for the month of December. It is going to be Star Wars. We're going to do that the week of The Force Awakens. So we won't have seen it going in, but we can talk about the franchise as a whole. The Twig Holiday Gift Guide will be going live on Tuesday. I got a lot of good things to talk about in there. And that's earlier than we normally post it, because normally I post it around December 12th. This year, I'm deciding to give you an extra 12 days to get shit done. And then we're going to take a break from probably December 18th, which is when The Force Awakens. I'll probably do a 10-minute review of the movie that night, and I'll post that up. And then we'll probably be back around, I'm thinking, January... probably the 11th is what I'm thinking here. So everyone gets a good month off to go do whatever. Ryan's going to New Zealand. Roebuck is...
romancing.
Going to the metropolis of Wallaceburg.
It's not much better than romancing dog meat.
He's going to ride that two-headed cow all the way down the 401. The Brahmin. So anyway, guys, I really hope you've enjoyed our discussion and talk about the Fallout franchise. What are your memories that we definitely want to hear what your memories are of the Fallout franchise? So be sure to call our voicemail line, 817-717-7202, or email feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Definitely want to send a shout-out to someone who actually sent me a little bit of fan mail earlier this week, and I just want to find it here.
Have Roebuck and I ever gotten fan mail or any mail?
Only hate mail.
I actually gotten fan mail about you, Ryan.
And oh, Jesus.
People like you. People like you. This was about a year ago. So this person wants their name...
To be fair, it was Roebuck.
This person wants their name withheld at their request, so I'm just going to read this on air.
Batman.
He says...
Frank Castle.
Thank you. Okay, he says, Mike, I've been contemplating sending this note for quite a while. With Thanksgiving a couple of days out, I thought it would be appropriate. I just wanted to let you know that you've made a tremendous difference in my life with your content. Like a lot of gamers, I've been through several bouts of depression, some ranging on severe. I found out about you through ScrewAttack circa 2007-ish, and you've definitely been a breath of fresh air in the gaming community. I really appreciate your positive approach in journalism. I listen to other podcasts and watch other videos, which are for the most part cynical. When I stumbled upon your work, I was in a pretty deep bout of depression. This is before I met my wife. I even had a couple of suicide attempts deep. I'm sorry. I would get into the worst kind of funk, and I could watch one of your videos, or if I was working, listening to an episode of The Prototype, sometimes twice, and it would completely lift me up. Still does. I'm a fan of all your content, and I'm very happy to see Birdman's toy chest make a comeback, by the way. Mike, I believe that listening, watching your content at times has saved my life. I think you deserve to know this. Sorry if it's strange. My brother is a combative instructor for the U.S. Army, and he gets emails from overseas from soldiers telling him he saved their lives with his teaching. Those are the best kind of compliments to him, so I thought I'd offer the same to you. Keep doing awesome things, Mike. I'll be tuned in. And then he says some personal stuff to me that he doesn't want read on air. So, big thank you to this listener who sent that in, because this is the American Thanksgiving weekend. Definitely want to give thanks to all of you that have stuck with me, Ryan and Roebuck.
Oh, I'm Mike Dodd. I read my fan mail on air, but if Ryan and Andrew get any... Oh, sorry.
Well, if Ryan gets some, don't.
Yeah, geez. Also, man, a positive influence. Did he not see your Naughty Bear review?
You're an evil man.
I would like to say thank you to this person. I hope he's having a wonderful day.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, we do it for you guys. Like I said, without Ryan and Roebuck, I could not do this. And we are a team, and I'm very thankful to have these two knowledgeable geeks, one with questionable, you know, opinions in romance.
Yes, Ryan. don't need to point him out on show.
But we do it for you guys, and we're very thankful for each an interaction we have with you, be it on Twitter, Facebook, or wherever. So, like I said, guys, have a happy Thanksgiving. We definitely appreciate all of you. And be on the lookout for more content this week. So I guess without any further ado, do we have anything else to announce on the show other than just Star Wars?
I'd like to make up some fan man. Oh, yeah, I won't be around for the Star Wars. So, I mean, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, whatever else it is people...
Whatever doesn't offend you. Whatever.
Celebrate. I don't really care about that. Yeah, because I'm really
happy
worried about
Wookie
offending
Life
people.
Day.
That just passed, actually. I remember.
Happy Life Partner Dog Meat Day, apparently, to you.
All right, guys. So on that note, we have been...
Andrew Radroach Roebuck.
Ryan the Uneven Flow.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying happy Thanksgiving, and I'll catch you guys across the wasteland.
Well, I don't know, but I've been told uranium ore's worth more than gold. Sold my cad, I bought me a Jeep, I got that bug and I can't sleep.
Uranium fever has gone and got me down. Uranium fever is spreading all around.
With a Geiger counter in my hand,
I'm going out to stake me some government land.
Uranium fever has gone and got me down.
Wonder if you can make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
You guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with a shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.